Welcome back. Michael Ryan Thomas here. It is For the Love of Food on WYSL 1040, 92.1 FM. And a lovely day after last weekend's whiteout. I was headed over to the Newbury Park Pastries, the Newbury and Friends Market. It's have a semi-indoor, semi-outdoor mini farmers market. Some of the vendors from the Brighton Farmers Market that are there this morning, starting at 11 to 3. Although I think several of them may be at a Canandaigua market, might not get there till around 12. But again, last weekend, whiteout just was pretty amazing. You don't normally expect that in May, and it was again. They had to shut down the. Michael Warren Thomas back here. It was disconnection here on my phone, I think. We're talking about the Newbury and Friends. They are don't have the problem of snow this weekend, and luckily you can go and pick up some local foods. Usually Kurt is there from Clearview Farms. He's got some wonderful jumbo chicken eggs, often some duck eggs too, if you want to try those. Again, it's amazing what difference a week can make. One of our listeners also sent a note that with temperatures at least one night this week, around 42 is the forecast as a low, that the tomatoes really don't like it that cold. And so if you do go and plant some tomatoes, or maybe you already did yesterday, when it gets that cold, put a 5-gallon bucket over them, put some sort of cover over them. They really want temperatures in the 50 degrees or higher. It will make a difference to put that in that protection on a couple of those cooler nights. So it's freezing is not going to happen, but low 40s is pretty cold, and it'll stunt the tomatoes. It'll set them back, just covering them that one night. Could make all the difference, and maybe even, I'm guessing, a couple of weeks of having to wait for your tomatoes. So it's not going to kill them, but it's not going to make them very happy. Cover your tomatoes. Basil also is not going to be happy in the 40s. Perennials will be fine, but that's in the last hour. This is why Lori Bricolo was mentioning, wait another week to put the tomatoes and basil in. Memorial Day weekend, is often a time we say to plant, and you can plant a lot of things earlier than that, but the things that like the warmer temperatures, tomatoes, peppers, basil, those are some of the key ones. Wait another week on those, or cover them on these cool nights. The phone number here, 585-346-3000, if you have comments, questions. Maybe you've had some great food recently, been doing some cooking at home that, having some fun making, baking bread, etc. You can reach me here, 585-346-3000. We'll talk about Eat Me Ice Cream this week, later this hour. Also, Flower City Pickers, which is an organization that is repurposing food from the Rochester Public Market, produce and things that in some cases, many cases, would have just been thrown out, but is actually still good. It's just sometimes might be a big box of tomatoes or something has a few bad tomatoes in it, and so the wholesalers don't want to sell them, and you just have to you know, pick through them. That's why it's one of the reasons their organization is called Flower City Pickers. So they've been active at the public market now for a few years. This past week, in order to do some research for the Eat Me Ice Cream interview, I got a curbside pickup of some of their ice cream and some delicious chocolate chip, both vegan and non, or vegan non-dairy, as well as one with cream and things, or traditional ice cream, and they're both delicious. The vegan one made with coconut milk, and love the hint of coconut flavor with it. No, that was really delicious. So, and we'll have Eat Me Ice Cream on later this morning. Right now, we have the development director from Flower City Pickers, Amanda Richardson. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for taking the time. And Saturdays are one of the busiest days of the week for the organization. The public market has their busiest day on Saturdays. How did Flower City Pickers get organized? When did it start?
We started back in 2015 when our founding director, he saw that there was food that was being left over at the public market, and he also saw that there was a need, that people needed food, and so he gave it to kind of connected those two things and picked up food and started connecting with agencies that can take the food and give it to people who need it.
Earlier in the show a few minutes ago, I was mentioning, might be a box of tomatoes, and a few tomatoes are bad in that, and so the wholesalers don't want to mess with them. They just, it's not worth their time. They'll just throw them out, right?
Exactly, yeah. So, at the Rochester Public Market, there are both local farmers, and then there are also the wholesalers that you mentioned. And so they might buy something that's, half a truckload of something or something like that. And it's, as you mentioned, it might not be worth their while to go through a whole pallet of something just to find the few good things to sell. If they determine that a lot of it is bad, they'll bring it over to us, and we'll do that sorting. We have a team of we have volunteers sign up for every Saturday, and we sort it into different categories. So we have A food, which is stuff you'd see at the supermarket and buy yourself, and then we have B food, which is something that when you see in your refrigerator, you might say, oh, I should use that tonight. Figure out something to make with that. It has a blemish or something, or needs to be used soon. And then seafood, which goes to what we call critters or compost. So it goes to a local farmer that can use it for animal feed, or if it's something that the animals don't want to eat, then it'll go into composting.
And the again, pigs in particular probably love the scraps that come from the produce and things. I love the way you repurpose these things. You're helping with reduce the waste. I mean, I've been at the public market for most of the last 30 years, off and on, not every Saturday, but many Saturdays. And I don't know if people have been there at 2, 1, 2, 3 o'clock as the market's winding down, and you see these just stacks of cases of food that previously the market staff would put them in, in the landfill. Essentially, you've got all kinds of great produce, and I don't think people realize the volume that's there, right?
Right. Yeah. So, as you mentioned, that this is all stuff that would go into the landfill if we didn't take the time to sort it and find the best home for it. It vastly ranges how much we recover in a week. It can, obviously it's seasonal, like most things in produce, where the winter months, we might get more closer to 1,000 or 2,000 pounds, which is still quite a bit, but that nothing compared to kind of summer months when it can be as much as like 13,000 pounds. It is quite a dent.
So that's one Saturday at the public market, at the end of the day, there might be 13,000 pounds of food that would have gone to waste?
That's correct, yep. So, you know, it depends on, you know, a lot of that may be going to then the farm or to compost, but thousands of pounds of that will be going to hunger relief agencies that can use it to cook in meals or give people groceries that they can also use in their home if they're food insecure.
Yeah, 13,000 pounds. Hard to fathom that much. That big a pile of food. And you have a new shed at the market, right? I saw a post about that being moved into place.
Yes, yep. So we actually got it in November, and it's been living under the D shed for the winter. But as the market heads into the springtime and we have more, there are more vendors, we've moved over to that little parking lot over by the Union Street entrance. So we're back up and running this Saturday. We were closed because of COVID for a little while. So we've got a new space. We've got a new operations manager, and we've got a lot of new procedures in place in order to keep all of our volunteers safe. So having fewer people and making sure everyone's 6 feet apart. So having more tables that we can sort at. And having hand washing stations and a safety officer and all sorts of things to make sure that we stay safe, but we're still able to keep that food from the landfill and get it to people who need it.
And I would imagine, I was thinking about this in terms of, you know, chefs and any waste that a restaurant might have, but for farmers, for the distributors, you know, there at the Rush Republic Market, they don't want to throw this out. I mean, they just can't deal with it. It doesn't pay for them to deal with it. But I would imagine that, in general, they're pretty happy to have the Flower City Pickers there to help them.
Yeah, the vendors are great. And like you said, this is kind of a byproduct of what they do. And if it can go to someone who will use it, or, you know, the nutrients be given to people, to animals, back into the soil, they would much prefer that. But there wasn't really an outlet for that before. Kind of the landfill was the only option. So yeah, they're great to work with, and enjoy having a place for the food to go that was otherwise going to be wasted. So it's a win for everybody.
I saw, I think, a post on Instagram about jackfruit. That was something that you guys had a few weeks ago, maybe?
Yeah, that's actually something, yeah, we got yesterday. And we've also been working with local agencies during the time that we've been closed. And, you know, there are a lot of different ways that a food rescue can operate. So we've been working with Lori's Natural Foods and picking up produce from them. We had jackfruit come in yesterday, and I had actually never seen a whole jackfruit. I'd eaten jackfruit that had been processed, but I hadn't realized quite how big they are, and how sweet they smell. So, that post, was from one of our board members, Amy Crozier. She took one and cut it up, and neither of us had ever worked with one before. So you can definitely learn a lot from doing this as well, and encounter new foods that you may not have before, and figure out what to do with them. That's part of the fun as well. If you have, you know, a lot of one thing, what can I do with tons and tons of parsley, you know, or and make a pesto from that, or what do I do with jackfruit? How do I preserve it so that it doesn't go to waste?
Yeah, I've had jackfruit as a replacement for meat, because of the texture of it in a barbecue sauce.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I think that she made some of that. I think she's bringing it to the market today for me to try. So I'm interested to see. But yeah, exactly. It kind of pulls apart like a pulled pork or something like that. So yeah, I'm interested to see what she came up with.
And so at this point, you said Flower City Pickers is back up. People may have seen your bus that was at the public market for a few years, right?
Yes, yep. I can't remember the exact dates of that, but that was given to us, and it was actually used not so much for transporting things, but for sheltering volunteers from the elements in both the hot sun and the cold winters of Rochester to do the sorting, because there's a general sorting into the A, B, and C, and then once we have all the stuff that we know is good for shelters, we then sort it into different boxes, and we have relationships with the shelters so that we know what kind of things they can work with and make sure that we're giving them food that they can actually use. And we know that some places are making hundreds of meals and can use a large quantity of carrots or something, whereas another agency might want something that they can more divvy up to give out as groceries or something like that. So the bus was used for that sorting purpose, that is, and for storing all of our materials, tables, and things like that. And we now have the shed for that. So, but the bus is definitely an icon of how things started for us.
It is. And again, with just a reminder, you're processing 13,000 pounds of food is a huge operation. How do people sign up to volunteer?
So you can go to our website, flowercitypickers.org, and there is a tab there that says volunteer, and you click on that, and there's a link to the platform that we use to sign up, signup.com. You just enter your email, and it has all the information there about the times and safety precautions, all of that stuff. And you can enter there, and we'll be having volunteer signups for the upcoming Saturdays now that we've started up again.
Are there organizations like this at other public markets or in cities around the country?
Yeah, so we're part of the Food Rescue Alliance, and there are, as I said, like a lot of different ways that people do food rescue. It can be something like you mentioned, restaurants, where someone has leftover actually made meals, and there's a food rescue in New York City called Rescuing Leftover Cuisine, and they do more of that, where they have a full meal, and it's kind of like you're being the Grubhub or something like that, where you're just picking up the food and getting it where it needs to go, so it's more of the delivery role. There are ones who rescue, like I was saying, are starting to work with lorries that goes from grocery stores and things like that. And I think our model is somewhat unique in that the Rochester Public Market is such a staple and big entity. And like we were talking about earlier, it has those wholesalers, so there is that that large quantity there. So I don't know of anyone that has our exact model, but there are definitely food rescues throughout the state and throughout the country who are doing really cool and amazing work. Some are using all bicycles to get around to also reduce emissions and things like that. Some are working with gardeners who have excess produce. This is one out in Colorado. So you can grow, you know, if you have a lot of extra tomatoes, you can get them picked up and delivered to someone who needs them, as someone who's an avid gardener.
And Amanda Richardson's with us, the development director for Flower City Pickers. And so donations, I would assume, would be very helpful also as you expand your operations and try to deal with the volume of food, but also some of the restrictions that, safety for your volunteers and things makes it a little more challenging.
Yes, exactly. Donations in a lot of forms, like I said, we're starting to work with grocery stores. So if you're a grocery store or know someone who works at a grocery store, you could ask them what, you know, what happens to the food that you can't use, and send them our way. There's contact information on the website, flowercitypickers.org. But also financial donations are very helpful as well. As you mentioned, we've had to spend money on things to get the market up and running again with all these safety precautions, which is obviously something that we didn't account for in our original budget. So we've done additional fundraising, but you can donate through the website and also through Facebook. We have a donate button there. And 100% of your donation will go toward our work. There aren't, at this time, any fees being taken out for anything. So, yes, we greatly appreciate any financial help as well.
And just to clarify, you know, FoodLink processes thousands, millions of tons of food from grocery mm-hmm. stores and things, but they're a food bank, so they're processing things that are canned, and Flower City Pickers deals with things that are more perishable, right?
Exactly, yeah. That's kind of the niche where we fit in this area. Because of the, like, how often pickups are done and that sort of thing, large grocery stores may compost or send to an anaerobic digester or something like that. So it may not be landfill bound, but there could still be produce that could be used to fight hunger that is going to those sources instead. So we really want to go kind of to the top. There's a food recovery hierarchy, and at the very top is source prevention, and the next thing is getting food to hungry people. So that's where we're kind of coming in. And, you know, lorries would compost it if they didn't give it to us, but instead we're taking it, something that they say, oh, this is going to be that in a couple of days, we're going to pull it, and we get it to someone who can immediately use it. So produce is difficult in that sense for grocery stores, because they can't just move it around and store it for a long time, and they might have limited cooler space at FoodLink. As you mentioned, they're very large. They're also doing meat and dairy and other things that need to be refrigerated. So produce is a little bit more difficult, and we're a little bit smaller and have built up that skill set of sorting and getting it to places that can use it.
When you think about all the steps of the process to grow that food, say those tomatoes, you know, they're planted, grown, they maintain them for months to get the plants to harvest, and then they ship the food to our area, and to have that just go to waste when it's perfectly good, is, it just seems so crazy, especially when we have people that are hungry.
Yeah, so looking at numbers of what goes to waste when you throw out food, I mean, it's agricultural products take up a lot of water, a lot of energy, a lot of land. It's crazy that at the end that it might go to a landfill and then decompose in an anaerobic place where it's creating methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. So for all of these resources to go into producing something that then is just going to cause further emissions does seem crazy, and is crazy. I think we like to think of it as kind of two sides of things. Like, one is that this is the system that we exist in, and as we've been talking about, there's this other problem of hunger that we're trying to combat. So there's an obvious place for a lot of this good food to go. But also there are probably better ways that the system could be designed or could be changed. So looking at policies and different things, because these problems of how our food system works and poverty and people not having enough to eat are very big systemic problems as well. So we are kind of working in this realm where we're solving the problem in one way and also kind of looking to solve these bigger problems from another angle as well. So there's actually a law going into effect January 1st of 2022 that is the food donation and food scraps recycling law in New York State. And that's going to require large food scrap generators, so large being, I think it's over a ton per week, so 2,000 pounds a week of food waste. They are going to be required to donate what's donatable and then either compost or get to a farm or to an anaerobic digester, the rest of those things, so long as they're within 25 miles of one of those places. So you are starting to see kind of requirements come down, and that will definitely affect our work as well as more places are required to make sure that their food waste is not going to the landfill.
And really, we wouldn't need to require this if places just did it on their own. I mean, you know, it's
right.
People exactly. complain about government regulations, but, you know, if places aren't going to do this on their own, what's smart, what helps people who need food, what helps, repurpose food waste, then the government has to require it.
Right. And you know, some large generators definitely already do some of this. But as you mentioned, the reason we're requiring it is that some aren't. And as part of the hope is, too, that when this is required, that will require the infrastructure to be there. As I said, there has to be a place within 25 miles. So in some of, like, an anaerobic digester or a composter. And so if there isn't one, somebody could see an opportunity to open that kind of facility if there are several grocery stores in the area that would then use it if they're required to. That's part of the reason that has to be there. And education is another huge part of it. People understanding food waste and where it is and things that we can do to prevent it and then divert it once it's already there and all those resources that we talked about have gone into it. There is a project called ReFed, which is Rethinking Food Waste Through Economics and Data. And they've actually kind of outlined 27 different things that we could do from like standardizing date labeling, because as we all have seen, there are sell-by dates and best-by dates and all of these things that can be confusing for consumers because it's around 40% of food waste actually happens within the home once it's come home from the grocery store.
Right.
And part of that reason can be because of best-by dates or a lot of different things. So a big part of it is education as well and understanding resources and how to best prevent food waste.
What's the byline for your website, flowercitypickers.org, is feed people, not landfills. That's four very simple words. Well said. Amanda, thank you for your time this morning. That's flowercitypickers.org for more information. And I'm glad you're around. I'm glad you're flourishing. We need organization like yours and of course, the goal in the future is that we won't need you, right?
Yes, exactly. That's that would if everything if we have better systems and we have for these larger things, that would be ideal. That everybody's getting the food we need and that we're wasting as little food as possible. But until then, we'll keep doing what we're doing.
All right. Well, thank you again, flowercitypickers.org. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Michael. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Amanda Richardson. Again, the Flower City Pickers founded in 2015, and I didn't realize it could be volumes of up to 13,000 pounds on a Saturday in the summer at the Rochester Public Market. We will take a quick break. be back to talk about Eat Me Ice Cream here on WYSL 1040. Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here with the sponsors of Ford Love of Food. Without sponsors, I wouldn't be on the radio. Let them know that you listen, and here's some pretty cool places for you to go visit, including the Lombardi's Gourmet Foods in Fairport. They, it's Anthony and Mary Lombardi, brother and sister, that have owned it for decades, and it's a great place to go, especially for pasta. They have about 300 kinds of pasta. You don't need to have the same kind of pasta every day. You can have, they've got tons of gluten-free and wheat pastas. They've got pastas made with peas, with beets, with mushrooms, with edamame and mung beans. It's as well as traditional pastas from around the world. And, of course, many from Italy. It's LombardisGourmet.com. They're open Monday through Saturday, Fairport, just north of the railroad tracks. And Anthony will make you a cup of espresso or coffee or tea while you're there. It's LombardisGourmet.com. And Max Viesman Place, Rosie's, Max Chop House, all three part of Tony Galassi's family of restaurants. These are fabulous restaurants, amazingly consistent. And a lot of that is the chefs like Seth Ryder Lindahl at Aunt Rosie's, some fabulous food. All three places doing takeout now. They did close for maybe 10 days to kind of get their systems up and running for takeout, and all three offer some great options. That's maxrochesterny.com for more details. Website has some great photography too, by the way. maxrochesterny.com. And also, Fox Run Vineyards and Anthony Road Wine Company, just south of Geneva on Route 14, are doing curbside. Their tasting rooms won't be open until mid-June at the earliest, as they are phase three for winery tasting rooms. But they are shipping wine and doing curbside, and some fantastic wines. Both wineries do dry reds, gorgeous white wines, dessert wines, port style wine from Fox Run, a white port style wine from Anthony Road. So consider getting maybe some dry rosé and a half case of mixed wines or a full case. FoxRunVineyards.com, AnthonyRoadWine.com. And finally, brought to you by Roarbox, our hometown craft brewer since 1991. They have two locations, both doing takeout. They're Brew Pub on Buffalo Road, and also the Beer Hall on Railroad Street by the Public Market. So get details at Roarbox.com. And, of course, their Red Wing Ale is out. The baseball season did not start at Frontier Field, at least not yet, but the Red Wing Ale is out and available, as well as old favorites like Scotch Ale. And one of their relatively newer ones, Space Kitty, double IPA. Details at Roarbox.com. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Ford Love of Food. Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Ford Love of Food. And 80 degrees, or almost yesterday, again, it was 79 in my car. Thermometer. Ice cream comes to mind even more so. I eat ice cream year-round, actually, but you know, warm weather does drive interest in ice cream. And from Eat Me Ice Cream, we have Caitlin Augustine with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us today to speak.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just noticed, I perused your website various times, but I hadn't spent enough time on the photo of you and Amber and your cellophane hats, and didn't realize that it's you have some great expressions as part of that. So people should make sure to watch that for just a minute or so, right?
Yeah, exactly. We like to have funky and fun.
Right. You don't take things too seriously. So exactly. When did Eat Me Ice Cream begin? What's the history of the company?
Yeah. So we founded the company in 2011 and in Rochester, New York. Just after we graduated college, we wanted to do something great for Rochester and the surrounding area and use the bounty of the Great Lakes and the Finger Lakes. We just thought we had such a rich area, beautiful land and water, and really wanted to take advantage of our growing season. We just didn't think that this area got enough press, so to speak. It was also after 2008, so it's very it's very similar to right now. I would say, 2008 was when we both graduated around that time from college, and it was like, what do we do next? We don't want to go back to school. We want to do something greater or bigger. We want to be a part of something. We want to be also kind of pioneers in flavor and taste and bringing back. Farm markets kind of started taking off again at that, the slow food movement and veganism, plant-based was kind of on the rise, and store shelves were changing. So again, here we are a year later during COVID-19, and food is just hot topic, so important right now. So that is kind of a little background of when and where we started making ice cream from scratch using local and fresh ingredients.
So you started with both vegan and traditional ice cream in the beginning?
Yeah, we did. We always had a vegan option. We were first to the market in Rochester. I mean, anywhere, I think, in Western New York, and still pretty much are the only non-dairy processing plant. An urban dairy or creamery in the center city with no cows. We are kind of pioneers to that. But we did do a traditional ice cream, and the flavors rotated each week at the farmer's market. And again, it was just using local ingredients, whereas before we realized that most ice cream shops were just purchasing a premix base from a supplier and then adding like a syrup or another flavoring to it, which was often fake or full of high fructose corn syrup.
So for a vegan ice cream, I had your chocolate chip last night, and that actually did both the vegan and the traditional one side by side. And the vegan one, you use coconut milk, right?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
That was delicious. And
thank you.
You got rave reviews from the rest of our family also. People should try something like that, even if they're not vegans. I mean, if you don't like coconuts, probably don't, because it does taste a little like coconut. But that's the ultimate goal, right, is to have a vegan ice cream that's so good that non-vegans order it and choose it over even traditional ice cream sometimes.
Exactly. Yep. The creaminess, the texture, mastering the texture and the flavor is so key. And when you have something that is, creamy and good flavor, good ingredients, yeah, that's supposed to be something that you could choose over a dairy or, there's a lot of lactose intolerant people. There's finally an option for people who would otherwise feel sick if they chose to partake in dairy.
Now, Eat Me Ice Cream, you don't have a real retail ice cream shop per se, but your products are available in a number of grocery stores, restaurants. Where can people find them?
Yeah, so we are open at our production facility in Rochester on Fridays, 12 to 6. We had intentions of extending those hours to the public, but COVID-19 hit, so we are doing a lot of curbside pickup and delivery, and it happens on Fridays. So we have an online store, and you can order ice cream flavors change each week. And then, yes, we've been working and partnering with a lot of Rochester restaurants and restaurants in the Finger Lakes, all the way to the Hudson Valley down to Manhattan and Brooklyn. It's been a really key, a really fun way to work with chefs and the growing season. So that's been a pivotal a component to our business and how we like to work. Those restaurants are on our website. And then for grocery, which has been a most recent project expansion, we really felt that our vegan non-dairy ice creams could compete with other big boy brands. And we just felt that we owed it to ourselves to get out there and bring our flavors and rep New York State in a way that hasn't really been done in the frozen category. So we are in a lot of independents like Lori's Natural Foods, Abundance Co-op, Honest Weight Co-op in Albany, and a variety of co-ops in the Philadelphia region, as well as Park Slope Food Co-op in Brooklyn, which is an amazing co-op. We are also in Whole Foods and Wegmans, and we've been working with both of those bigger grocery chains for about a year and a half, Whole Foods a little longer. And both have been amazing to work with.
So, you know, I think of Eat Me Ice Cream as the bicycle that you brought to the Brighton Farmers Market, you know, and selling there. Didn't realize the scale that you've expanded to. That's a lot of stores and a lot of area. And, you know, going to the New York City market, there's some great ice cream in New York City. That's amazing.
Yeah, we feel at home there for some reason. I think it's just the passion for New York State. I mean, we have such a beautiful state from the Finger Lakes to the Southern Tier, all the way to the Adirondacks, to North Country, down to Brooklyn, Manhattan, Long Island even. I mean, to the very tippy edge of Long Island, you know. And to get approval in that area that is more dense and just it was just so worth making the drive every week to deliver our products. We had a great response and also encouragement to keep going, because our city is great, Rochester and the Finger Lakes, but also we don't have as many people to engage with. So when we're talking about market, or Brighton Farmers Market, it's great to service our customers, but also we need to expand and we need to look out and we need to get our product to other people who could enjoy it as well. So we've been able to do that still, even as a pretty small brand and local company working in the Northeast and working with different partners and partnerships, which has been great because we get to come back to Rochester and the Finger Lakes and bring back, you know, what we've learned and our time in the food world, in the food industry.
Yeah, well, and your website, again, you can order and pick up on Fridays, but it includes also kombucha and things like the carrot cake from Red Fern. So
yes, it does. We're partnering with our with partnerships that we've had for years. Red Fern has been, we've been with her since the beginning. She's been a big fan and supporter. That's Andrea, founder of Red Fern, which is located in Rochester. And Kombucha, Kat, she is the founder of Kombucha and just a lovely woman, both women doing great things in the food world. So each week we change up what we're offering on our website, and Red Fern cooks vegan sweets and Kombucha makes kombucha. So it's just like a fun pairing, you know.
It is. Red Fern has delicious food, savory dishes as well as sweet things. Just interviewed Caitlin from Kombucha last weekend on my wine show.
Again,
you can order these through the Eat Me Ice Creams website. Now, we talked about vegan ice cream and traditional ice cream, but you also do some fun sandwiches, ice cream sandwiches, one of which I got yesterday, the potato chip Sammy, which is cool looking and delicious. What is it?
Yeah, so we have a great little secret cookie lady who makes our cookies. And the potato chip Sammy, the potato chip cookie kind of came out of a beer and ice cream pairing mashup that we did with Swiss Water Brewing in Rochester. We were looking for something savory and wanted to kind of recreate that concept of a couch potato. So this has chunks of homemade sponge candy and on the sandwich and caramel and peanut butter. And the cookies have potato chips baked into them. So it's a really savory, salty snack meant to, you know, get cozy and eat it on the couch or have it with a beer, you know, a kombucha if you want. So that's what it is.
It's crazy combination and delicious. You also do ice cream bars coated in chocolate, sort of that's kind of an old retro thing, right?
Yeah, it is. Novelties. Yeah, and what we're talking about here are novelties, really. They are. And we take our ice cream that we make, we put it in molds with the popsicle sticks, which are fortunately compostable. And we dip them in a homemade chocolate dip, like kind of like a hard shell, a hardening shell. It's coconut oil and some really fabulous semi-sweet chocolate that we melt down, and each bar is dipped. And lately we've been getting into like texture components under the chocolate. So like toasted Spanish peanuts, or the crunchy sponge candy that we make homemade, toasted coconut or caramel swiggles, peanut butter swiggles. I mean, we make everything in-house. So those are really fabulous. You know, they're decadent. They're not too sweet, but it's just like a special treat.
Those sticks, by the way, make great plant markers for planting seeds and stuff. They're just awesome.
Yes, that is great.
And again, we mentioned the chocolate chip, but really you're best known for really unusual combinations. Right now you've got mint and rose custard, which is a dairy product, using other things like jasmine, and unusual combinations are really what you're known for, and at least in my mind.
Yeah, we are. You know, we really... that's how we began. This is the cornerstone of what Eat Meat is, and Eat Me comes with directions. You know, it's simply Eat Me. And we just flavor mashups and thinking ahead of when we first started where flavor was going or how to get people interested and engaged. Also, we were inspired by the craft beer movement. I mean, they were really the pioneers of some of these collaborations, we call them, like what we're doing with Kombucha or Red Fern, and weird flavor infusions. So lavender was one of those things for us. I mean, no one, I think, ever saw lavender in non-dairy vegan ice cream, and that is proving out to be one of the top sellers in grocery Wegmans and Whole Foods, and that's something that we started a long time ago, was infusing lavender into ice cream. We've done, traditionally, we work with the growing season. So, like, for example, coming up in May here, as the lilacs blossom, we will do an infusion of lilac ice cream, which is also a fan favorite, but we can only do it now because it's when the flavor is best.
Yeah. You could buy lilac flavoring, but that's not the point.
Right, exactly. We like to call ourselves kind of like the brewers of, you know, ice cream, in a sense. There's a lot of steeping, straining, blending in what we do.
And again, available for pickup, order in advance on Fridays at this point, noon to 6. It was really easy to pick up. I was there yesterday picking up my order, and again, what's available varies each week, And can't wait to see what's new in the rest of this year from you. Caitlin, thank you very much for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, and thank you for supporting us. We really appreciate this, and it's so critical for our area to have these types of connections for food. And just before me, the composting flower city pickers, I mean, this is great. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day.
Yep, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Caitlin Augustine. She and Amber Odner are the owners of Eat Me Ice Cream. Here in Rochester, Hungerford Building, which is full of artists of all kinds, not just food artists, but really a very appropriate place for Eat Me Ice Cream to be based. We will take a quick break. Be back afterwards from our sponsors on WISL 1040.
Jumbo line, a crawfish pie, and a filet gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see Mama Shazamio. Pick it tough, fill fruit jar, and be gay, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here with the sponsors of For the Love of Food. And our sponsors are being careful, very careful right now. Ristorante Lucano doing takeout. And so you can... look them up online, ristorantelucano.com, to get more details, some truly Italian food. Get a few extra dishes, entrees, so that you can freeze some of that, and you'll have some delicious dinners for the future. Ristorantelucano.com. You can also order wine with it. Bottles of wine are available from restaurants now, at least temporarily, during the shutdown. And that means the Italian wines from Ristorante Lucano are available, and they have some fabulous Italian wines. All Italian wines on their wine list, except for one from the Finger Lakes. RistoranteLucano.com for more information. Also brought to you by Knapp Winery and Vineyard Restaurant. The restaurant hoping to open this summer as move into other phases of the reopening. But the winery is open 7 days a week for curbside pickup and also for shipping. It's at knappwine.com. Try their Cabernet Franc, their dry rosé, their limoncello, many wines to try. Maybe get a mixed box of six, half a case or a full case of wine to enjoy, to maybe share with family and friends, or maybe ship up three bottles or six bottles to a family or friends. And let them know you're thinking about them. Knappwine.com, K-N-A-P-P, knappwine.com. Also brought to you by Dr. Constantine Frank, Vinifera Wine Cellars. They're just above Hammondsport and only an hour and 15 minutes away for curbside pickup. Also shipping, of course. And you should, if you get some wine, maybe some sparkling wine, some outstanding and quite a few different sparkling wines from Dr. Frank, you can also order a biography of Dr. Frank, which will be fun to read, riveting, really, while you're enjoying a glass of wine from Dr. Constantine Frank. It's drfrankwines.com. Again, supporting our local wineries during this shutdown and reopening is crucial, supporting small businesses in general. drfrankwines.com. And finally, Captain Jim's Seafood Market and Mayor's Paint and Hardware are right around the corner from each other. Captain Jim's has a table right outside their front door. They'll put your order there. You'll let them know that you're there. Some great fried fish and fresh seafood of many different options. You can get baked salmon or you can get fresh scallops to go. It's Tuesday through Saturday. Captain Jim's is open. Again, for now, a table out front where they will put your order, Captain Jim's Seafood Market. And around the corner, anyway, Captain Jim's is East Main at Winton. On Winton and Blossom is Mayor's Paint and Hardware, and they are open 7 days a week. They have one curbside pickup door, and the other door you can go in if you have a mask on, and people should be wearing masks. It's very simple. Respect for other people is what that says, and so But they ask you not to do a lot of browsing. Go in and get what you need and make it as quick as you can. Mayor's Paint and Hardware. They have people you can ask questions if you're trying to fix something, do some painting. They have some great staff there. That's mayorhardware.com. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on For Love of Food. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's For Love of Food. And later this afternoon, this evening, I think I'll probably have the interviews up in the archives. We have a brand new website, saverlife.com. Same address, brand new website. Chris Clemens of Exploring Upstate and the Rochester Food Net was the one who designed it, did an incredible job, and extremely grateful for all his work to redesign the website. So, easier to find interviews. We'll be adding past interviews over time, but you can go and listen to whether it's Christopher Bates from FLX Table, FLX Provisions from a couple weeks ago, or I said Caitlin Schwartz from Katbucha was on last Sunday. I had her on the wine show. With these interviews, like with Eat Me Ice Cream, will be up shortly. We'll be back in the next hour with Discover the Finger Lakes here on WYSL 1040.